mean nothing by it.
Didn't mean nothing.
Just passing the time. If you don't want to accept that, I don't know what else I can do for you. Might it be something else?
I don't know. Will there?
Is something wrong?
With what?
With anything.
Is that what you're asking me? Is there something wrong with anything?
Will there be anything else?
You already asked me that.
Well, I need to see about closing now.
See about closing?
Yes, sir.
What time do you close?
Now. We close now.
Now is not a time. What time do you close?
Generally around dark. At dark.
You don't know what you're talking about, do you?
That terrifying.
Creepy. I literally just peed my pants. And I've heard that clip 1,000 times before.
Pepper needs new shorts.
Javier Bardem, congratulations. I hope he never does that character for his kid or ever gets that haircut again for any movie. Penelope Cruz and Javier Bardem, it's not quite a royal baby, but it's the next best thing.
He's going to give the worst bedtime stories ever.
And then the man killed the little child. Good night, my love.
Oh, I love Green Day. The old Green Day.
They already have a 2-year-old, and it's a baby girl. So congratulations. Do not have a name on this child. We do have a name on the royal baby, though. Oh, I'm so excited. Are you excited?
Bartholomew.
What are you doing over there?
It's the drum.
We debated this at length yesterday. I suggested Murray in honor of Andy Murray, who just won the Wimbledon, you know, and they may not get another UK winner for 50, 100, 500 years.
So you're suggesting the British royalty name their baby after someone else.
Murray. Awesome. That would have been a good name. Well, you know what? It turns out that it's better than the stupid name they came up with. That's right. It's official. I mean, haven't we already had a bad one of these in the past? The man who will be king, George Alexander Lewis.
Lame.
Louis.
That's what they've come up with. So disappointing. His first words? I think offenses are too fast. Already an SEC football fan. God bless him. More villains coming up in mere moments. Please hang on. We have an interview we have to go to. We get to go to. He is with BleacherReport.com. And his parents thought long and hard about his name, and they named him Barrett. Barrett Salee, joining us on the Revolution Hotline. Royalty in the world of SEC media, I'll tell you that much. Hello, Barrett.
Yeah, at least I have a better name than Royal Baby. That's disappointing.
That's a plus.
His initials are Gal. Come on, man. You got to think about these things. He's going to be made fun of at Royal School.
That kid is going to get made fun of so bad.
I know. Hey, Gal, come on over and play with us. I'll have you killed. Plus, wasn't George a tyrant? Wasn't there a couple of Georges through the years that were tyrants?
Yeah.
I thought
there was.
King George.
Barrett, I was begging them to call him Joffrey after the Game
taxation.
Of Thrones character, but they wouldn't do it.
Yeah, that would have been solid. That should definitely have happened.
They should have named him T or Boston.
Something no taxation without representation.
That's it. Anyway, let's get to we'll talk some business here, I suppose. Okay, so what was your anything that stands out to you now that the dust has settled on SEC Media Days? Certainly the Brett Bielema talk. We actually just had on Dave Bartu from College Football Matrix talking about the actual data behind fast versus not so fast and the fact that maybe there isn't much of an argument there. So anyway, all kinds of stuff. You feel free to go wherever you like on this particular case.
Yeah, you know, the pace of play thing I thought was really interesting because, you know, we talked about this before. I thought Brett Bielema would, and Nick Saban for that matter, would make a bigger deal out of that because, you know, I think they both realize they're fighting a losing battle. And why not, you know, kick and stomp your feet on the biggest stage of the offseason if you can. So I figured Bielema would do that. But when you got the schedule of when each coach was going to be where, and we knew Auburn and Arkansas were going to be going together, but we saw Gus Malzahn in the big room before Bielema, and he made that statement about, he thought it was a joke, the criticism. I was like, oh, it's on now. This is going to be – this is, and it started off this sort of passive-aggressive back and forth between the two through the world of social media as they were hitting each different room at Media Days. It was fascinating. And then, you know, I read Dave Bartu's piece and everything on that too, and I tend to agree with him. You know, It's the idea of Brett Bielema, a coach who advocates smash mouth football, all of a sudden caring about player safety, I think is incredibly hypocritical. And I think just admit it. Admit that it's for schematic advantage. I think if Nick Saban and Brett Bielema said, "Hey, look, we hate defending this crap. We don't want football to be this," I think that would appease a lot of people because at least it would be honest.
Very good. Barrett Salee joining us from BleacherReport.com on the Revolution Hotline. The Manziel thing, are you one side or the other or kind of down the middle?
No, I think he handled it. His appearance at Media Day is the way it should be handled. You know, obviously he didn't own up to everything. I still believe he was out Friday night and was hungover, and I don't think, you know, it's that much of a stretch to think that way. I still want to know why AJ McCarron didn't wake him up the next morning. I mean, dude, they were roommates. At least wake your buddy up.
Don't you think there's a growing thought process that perhaps he wasn't in the room to be awakened?
Call me crazy.
It would certainly make a lot of sense. It would certainly make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So, you know, I thought Manziel, though, I liked the way he handled it because, you know, he apologized to the Mannings. He did as much as he possibly could, you know, publicly, because if he did admit he was hungover, he'd be admitting a crime because he is 20. But, you know, I think the rest of the stuff, he said, look, a lot of the stuff is blown out of proportion. I'm not going to stop living my life. I like to have fun, and good for him. I mean, a lot of the stuff he was, you know, being vilified for this offseason is, you know, are things that normal 20-year-old kids do every single day in college all the time. So I thought he handled that part well. And, you know, what was disappointing to me, and not to throw my fellow media members under the bus, but it was almost like every single place he went, somebody had to be the guy that asked that question, that, you know, where were you that Friday night? And it was like by the third hour, everyone knew what he was going to say. I mean, it wasn't like it was a surprise that he was going to say, "Oh, I did absolutely not hungover. I overslept. My phone didn't go off." And
yes,
you know, so after following him around for about an hour and getting my stuff and the quotes that I needed, I wrote. And then at the final room of the day, people were still asking him about it. It's like, dude, let's get to some football questions. Let's get to some, you know, schematic questions. Let's get to, you know, what's the offense going to look like? Is it going to be different? Or, I mean, just fun stuff. Like, how did you enjoy media days? Was it a circus like you anticipated or something fun? Don't be such an egomaniac that you have to ask the same silly little questions to him over and over again.
A couple things with that, and then we'll move on, because I do have one pertinent question to A&M's offense when we get through the garbage. But as far as advice for college kids, I don't encourage necessarily you sleeping over with random girls when you're on the road, especially in Thibodaux, Louisiana, because that's quite an interesting area, and you just never know what you're going to end up with. But the bottom line is, if you're going to go that route, make sure you hook up with a girl who has a charger for the same kind of phone that you use, because otherwise you could be in a bad way, just like Johnny Football got himself into. As far as him as a college student, my take on him is he is acting like an average college student, but the problem is when you accept the trappings of a superstar athlete, which he is, and I don't care if you're talking about college, pro, or otherwise, you don't get to live like everybody else. So here's the thing. Yes, you get to go on The Tonight Show, and you get to go to, you know, NBA games, and you get access to things that you wouldn't normally get access to. Of course, part of that is the fact that he's got parents with means, so there is certainly, you know, that's part of the discussion as well. But he's getting access to things he wouldn't if he wasn't a high-profile athlete who, oh, by the way, just won the Heisman Trophy. You can't have your cake and eat it, too. So you can't go out and get drunk and act like a clown like most 20-year-olds do, and there's nothing wrong with that. But if you accept all the trappings, you have to give up this other stuff. And like I said, having a beer is not that much fun compared to what you'll be able to do later. And the thing is, if you will skip a couple of college parties and you keep your nose clean, you're going to make a whole bunch of money as an NFL quarterback. And guess what? NFL parties are 10 times better than college parties in College Station, Texas. I'm sure of it.
I've been to College Station.
I've never been to a single NFL party, but I can only imagine. Anyway.
Well, the one on any given Sunday included a car being chainsawed in half by LL Cool J, so I just assume that's what happens at every NFL party. But I tend to agree. You know, of all the things that he's been accused of this offseason, you know, the NBA locker room stuff, I think, is the one thing that maybe he shouldn't have gotten access to. But his family's got money. If they can afford floor side seats, go for it. You know, if he needs to hold himself to a higher standard because he is a superstar celebrity. But why? I don't necessarily get that. I mean, he still is a 20-year-old college dude.
If he doesn't want to, the bottom line is, if he doesesn't want to answer questions about it, then he shouldn't do it. That's my point. Because again, you're getting looked at.
But this, I don't think he minds answering questions about it. That's the thing. I think he's all for it. He's like, sure, if you want to ask me about that stuff, that's fine, because I'm totally cool with the way I live my life, and he's basically said as much.
But I think it's the scrutiny for someone in A&M is not necessarily a positive, and they have better things to do with their time. Let me ask you one pertinent question. We can debate that all day, I suppose. Let me ask you about the offense, because I don't know how much this came up, if at all. How much of an impact did Kingsbury have play to play, and how much of an impact do you anticipate that'll have in the coming season?
Well, you'd have thought that would have came up, but it did. It was the furthest thing from anybody's mind. But Kingsbury. It's still someone's offense. It's always been someone's offense. Kingsbury played a part of it. He, did call plays with a lot of help from someone. They did adapt based on someone's desire and someone's input. Based on the quarterback. 2 years ago, someone had Case Keenum, who wasn't a runner at all. Now Johnny Manziel, who's the complete polar opposite of Case Keenum, and that's all someone. That's not Kingsbury. So the guys they have, Clarence McKinney, Jake Spivitol, those guys have been around the block. I think McKinney is so familiar with someone that it's not going to miss a beat. And then Spivitol is such a good quarterback coach that I think it'll actually help Manziel in the passing game, which means they'll probably pass more anyway. And I think they're going to pass more anyway to begin with. But it's going to look different. They have so many running backs and I think so many tall wide receivers that it's going to be more of a run-based spread, throwing over the top, sort of like what Malzahn does at Auburn. So I think it's going to look more like a two-back, hurry-up offense out of the spread, but still basically a smash-mouth offense, and then boom, they'll hit you over the top and hit those tall wide receivers. And I think those tall wide receivers are ultimately what's going to save Johnny football, because he's not going to have to scramble around as much as he has in the past, because he can just loft it up and play 500.
Barrett Salee joining us, BleacherReport.com. Interesting numbers here, and again, you have to, of course, consider the fact that Arkansas plays in the SEC and a lot of these other schools don't, but Arkansas is over-under on the season. The newest numbers we've seen have Arkansas right at 5.5 wins on the season, which I think most people can understand as far as Vegas perspective goes. That's about right, but that is also shared by Indiana, Iowa, Minnesota, South Florida, and Wake Forest. Those schools are all also expected to win 5.5 games in Vegas right now to start the season. That gives us a pretty sobering perspective on where Arkansas is in the big scheme of things.
Yeah, it's obviously different strokes for different folks, and being in the SEC certainly is a big part of that. And I think a lot of that's Arkansas' schedule too, and that we've talked about in the past. That schedule from mid September to late October is brutal. I mean, that may be an 0-5 stretch. So, I think it's an indicator of where Arkansas is, but it's not necessarily an indicator of where they're going. I think Arkansas, this was going to be a rebuilding year anyway. No matter who was there, just because the personnel turnover is just so great. That it was going to be a rebuilding year, and that sometimes you have to go through those to succeed. And then with a new coach, I think they expect that there's going to be some inconsistencies. I think like every new coach, so it is telling of where Arkansas is. I still think they're a bowl team, but I think they're a fringe bowl team, and they may have to beat Rutgers in order to get there. But it's not permanent. It'll change, and I think Bielema is the right guy. It's going to be a tough road to hoe there for Arkansas this year.
Auburn's 6.5 as far as over-under on wins. Do you expect them to get there?
I would say, 6 or 7. I think that's probably the perfect number for Auburn. And quite honestly, I think they probably need to get either Arkansas or Tennessee to get to 7. And I think they probably could get Tennessee. I think Arkansas's probably better. But, the thing with Auburn is, I think Auburn's probably going to have the most success out of all the new head coaches this year, record-wise, but I don't think they're going to have the most success on the field. I think Bielema will show that he's got his program headed in the right direction. They're going to be more consistent, and same thing with Tennessee.
So you do anticipate Arkansas will get to 6?
I would say 6. That Rutgers game is the one that I think is going to it's so tricky. If they can get that one, then, yeah, they're going to be a bowl team. If they don't, then it's going to be hard.
Yeah, we're assuming Arkansas, if they can get that game, you'll be sitting at 4-0. I could make a case that Louisiana is the most important game of the year, because that's a game they absolutely could lose on in a perfect situation. But if you lose that game, forget it anyway on the season. So my deal is you better win that game. That's a given. And the Rutgers game, if you're sitting at 4-0, I got to believe they'll find a way to get 2 more wins somewhere along the way.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And the problem is, though, after that stretch, how beat up is Arkansas going to be? Because after that Alabama game in late October, that's 5 straight games just of brutal football that could leave that team really, really beat up.
Well, Alabama can't be that hard to play against. I mean, they don't even play fast.
Okay.
They don't even run the hurry up. They play old-fashioned American football, whatever Bielema called it last week.
That's easy. Easy to play against. Okay, you be commissioner for a minute. Commissioner Barrett Salee of the SEC joining us on the Revolution Hotline. What do you do to create more parity in SEC scheduling?
I would adopt something of, as far as the rotating opponents go, I would keep permanent cross-division rivals, and if we have to compromise, I would just make Auburn, Georgia, Tennessee, and Alabama do it, and everybody else can rotate. But then do base flex scheduling every year based on strength. You know, the NFL, if you were a Super Bowl team last year, you have a tougher slate the next year. I would say that if you're Alabama, then you're going to get teams out of the East, the South Carolinas, the Floridas. If you're, say Auburn last year that finished 3-9, then maybe out of the East you do get Vanderbilt. Maybe you do get, Kentucky, the teams that are of a lower ilk. That way, I think you have more parity. I think you have teams that, can jump up and down based on, just having one down year or getting, catching lightning in a bottle with a superstar player or something. And, you have the big time teams playing big time games in division and across the division.
I think that's smart because the SEC, the next closest comparison, everybody always says the NFL. So why not schedule like it, right?
Yeah, I don't like the NFL, but I think the NFL does that right. I think that I don't watch the NFL for the regular season that much, but I think that is a big reason, and I think an underrated reason why that league is so successful.
Real quick, we got to let you go here, but Missouri's at 6-2 on the over/under. Does that surprise you that they're that high, or is that what you were kind of anticipating?
That's kind of what I was anticipating. Their early season schedule is pretty easy, too, but that Arkansas State game could be tricky, too. And at Indiana, which, I mean, it's nothing really to write home about, but, I mean, it's a road game. So, I think 6-6, I mean, that could get Pinkel fired. 7-5 could even get him fired, too. So that's about right where I thought they'd be, but it's not where Gary Pinkel needs them to be.
Do you have a favorite villain from movie history?
I would say Bodie from Point Break or Johnny from Karate Kid. And if we're going old school, Bart Connor from Rad.
Gosh, those are all good.
Wow.
Bodie's another one. He's kind of an anti-hero. I mean, he's a lovable, hateable guy. So
put him in a bunny bag, Johnny.
Bodie, he's not going to paddle to New Zealand.
So you say. All he's got to do is kind of get off to the side, out of the view of the FBI. He'll be fine.
Patrick Swayze can do what he wants.
Yeah, that's
right.
True. Well,
that is true. He can.
Now he's going to that big breaker in heaven. God bless him.
All right.
Barrett, thank you, man. Appreciate the time.
All right.
Adam, Mike, and Chris.